What is going on, guys? This is Brendan Burns, and welcome to the Brendan Burns Show. Join me as I interview, dissect, and share the stories of high performers who have created the life that they deserve on their terms. I sit down with speakers, professional athletes, and successful entrepreneurs from all over the world who have chosen to live a life of fulfillment and joy over status and money. In each episode, I share actionable strategies that you can implement in your life, plus inspiration along the way. So come join me for this episode of The Brendan Burns Show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of The Brendan Burns Show. Joining us today is Moose Reed, sales director at Sphere Rocket Virtual Assistants. Moose brings over 14 years of dynamic sales experience to the podcast, starting from humble beginnings in door-to-door sales and progressing through roles such as timeshare and going as far as wholesaling mutual funds for the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock. He's now shifted gears to specialize in building high-performance sales teams for startups. Moose's impressive track record includes the creation of 150 sales organizations and the placement of over 3,000 sales representatives. Beyond his professional life, Moose is eagerly awaiting the arrival of his baby girl due at the end of October, proudly parenting two energetic pit bulls and cherishing his role as husband. A former football player at FSU, he remains a diehard Seminoles fan, bringing the same level of dedication and teamwork from the field into the world of sales. Moose, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Brendan. Excited to be here and stoked to see you again, man.
Yeah, for sure. My first question for you is, I'm sure you get this a lot, but what's the genesis of your name, Moose?
Oh, that's an easy one. So here's the real play on the name Moose, right? You're going to meet 10 other Jonathans. You'll have sales calls with guys Jonathans. You'll have interviews with guys Jonathans. That's my real name, right? But Moose is my nickname. Moose, I was given by my first football coach when I was 9 years old. He was like, "You're big and goofy. I'm going to call you Moose." And it stuck with me my entire life. All my teachers call me Moose, and all my yearbooks, it always said Moose. My parents call me Moose. My wife calls me Moose, unless I'm in trouble. When I'm in trouble, I get called Jonathan. Everyone's called me Moose, and it's branding play for me, right? You're not likely to meet too many mooses, so I go by Moose.
I love it, man. The closest we've had on the podcast, I don't even see that orange skateboard right there.
Yeah, I see the top of it.
Yeah, so that's Beaver Fleming. He's a professional skateboarder who came on the show. He gave me the board.
Oh, badass.
Yeah, here, I'll show you. And for the YouTube watchers. So
yeah, that's cool.
You're the closest to Beaver we've had on the show. Let's go.
Cool, man. I'm not going to say anything on that. I might go.
Yeah.
I might get cold. So
where'd you grow up?
I've moved all around my entire life. So I grew up in a timeshare family. My father was a VP for a company called Wyndham. And in timeshare, you go wherever the market's hot. People are always like, "Oh, did you grow up in time?" Military? I'm like, no, I actually moved around more than a military person. And never stayed in one spot for more than 2 years. So I say I'm from Orlando just because that's where I finished high school, but I spent time in Orlando, Florida, Destin, Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, to name a few. But Orlando is where I call home now. I live in Vero Beach, Florida, about an hour and a half south of Orlando and about 2 hours north of Miami.
Nice. Out of all the different places that you bounced around with your family growing up, what would you say was your favorite and why?
Gosh, I got to say Orlando. I love Orlando. Orlando is home for me. I was there for first and second grade, sixth and seventh grade, and then my junior and senior year. So that's where I spent the most time. The reason why, no reason other than it's just home for me, right? Great. So, like you mentioned on the intro, right? I love football, so great high school football out in Orlando. There's always a ton to do. I'm not too far from Orlando now, so I still spend a lot of time out there. Me and my wife are big Disney people, which is, you know, we're one of those adults that are Disney people. A lot of other people call those weirdos, right? That's fine. But I proposed to her at Disney. It's Orlando's just a great spot where we spend a lot of time.
Nice, man. So
you're in Scottsdale, aren't you?
I'm in San Diego.
San Diego. Okay, I knew it was out west.
I grew up, I was born in Manhattan and then spent a couple of years there, 4 years, I think. And then we moved out to Long Island, which is where I grew up. So
Yep.
it's funny, I'm actually rewatching The Sopranos right now, the show that takes place in New Jersey. So it's very similar, kind of like suburban, an hour from Manhattan. And there's a
Yeah.
lot of great things to do there. And New York City's great as well, obviously. But COVID hit, I moved out, came out,
Nice.
wanted to surf, wanted a better lifestyle, and got it.
Yeah. You're much more of an LA guy than you are, or than a San Diego guy than you are a Northeast guy. My wife is from Jersey, and there's a vast, vast difference, right? You seem so much more laid back. Are you close to LA?
Yeah, so it's LA, and then Orange County is about an hour south of LA, and then an hour south of that roughly is San Diego. So when I first
Okay.
moved out, it's so funny and embarrassing at the same time. But when I was in high school, me and my friend Dan watched this show called The OC, which,
Oh, yeah, of course.
yeah,
The OC was amazing.
and we loved it, and we thought like, hey, one day we're gonna be like Ryan and Luke, and we're gonna move to Orange
Yes.
County. And so literally when COVID hit and I was just rewatching all these shows, I watched some of these OC episodes again, and I just did a Google of, hey, Newport Beach, because that's where the show takes place, Newport Beach.
Yeah.
And then you know how ads work, obviously working in sales and marketing, I now get pixeled for the Irvine Company's luxury apartments in Newport Beach. And so for like a year of COVID, the ads. So finally I said, I've always wanted to move, and I've wanted to move somewhere warmer, right? So it's either Florida, Texas, California. Those are kind of what I came up with. And I did a trip to Orange County. I stayed in Newport Beach in an Airbnb, looking
Yep.
for Ryan, looking for Harbor High,
Set.
and Seth, Cohen. And it's just the first morning I woke up, I saw the car right next to me in on the road, had surfboards tied up to the top of it. I went right to the beach, and by the end of that 4 day kind of like pre-exploratory trip, I had a deposit down on a place in Newport.
I'll say this: last March, I had taken a job. So March of 22, as a sales director for an international logistics company, right? And they were obviously in Newport. It's the biggest logistics place in the world, right? So it was gorgeous, though. Me and my wife took a weekend out there, and I know it's expensive tax wise and everything else, but I get it, right? Florida's gorgeous, but it's so hot. Out there, it's like gorgeous, but not hot. It's crazy. It's amazing. It's worth it.
No, it's awesome, man. I love it here. So, both my parents were lawyers, so I grew up kind of in a lawyer family. Sounds like you grew up kind of in a sales family. So I'm curious, what
Yeah.
was that like? What did you get from, it sounds like, your father, and did you always know you were going to work in sales as well?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I'll try and keep my cool. Oh, going deep on the first question there, but
Go, man.
I never thought that I would get into sales, Brendan. I always thought that I was going to be a doctor. My family never thought that I would get into sales either. They always thought that I wasn't aggressive enough personality wise, right? It was really weird. I had two sides of me always growing up, right? I had this Bruce side of me, right, where I was very political, always friends with everybody, right, always high-fiving everyone. But then there was the football side of me, right, where I was like a very dirty football player, and like the switch would come on, and like I would just black out, and I wouldn't be myself at all, right? It was awesome. But then in 2009, I walked onto the Florida State football team, which was always a goal of mine. And when I made the team, it was the only game that my parents, from the time I was 9 years old to the time I was 20 years old, didn't make it to come and watch me play, right? Which was a weird thing for me. So the next semester after I had made the football team, I had gone home during Christmas break, and during the Christmas break, I found my family living in a hotel, right? Which was weird. Growing up, my family always did very, very well, right? My dad, though, not saying anything wrong, was a great salesperson, but he was also a typical salesperson, right? Meaning that no matter how much money he made, whether it was $150,000 a year or $400,000 a year, we lived at
That you
the
would
end of
spend it
our
all.
budget, right? Yeah. So as a result, in 2008, when everything hit the fan, Timeshare is very, very correlated with the market, right? So when the market took a dump, timeshare sales stopped happening, right? My father had lost his job and started bouncing from job to job, and we lost two houses, we lost two cars. So I had a decision to make when I went back home for Christmas break, and it was either I was going to drop out of college and figure out how to help my family and get them back on their feet, or I was going to keep on playing football and go back to Florida State. Well, I decided that I was going to drop out of school and go help my family, right? As a result, the only thing I could think of how to do was getting into timeshare. My father was my first boss in timeshare. He didn't even know what timeshare was, right? He had me go door to door at a resort one day. And I was like, "Dad, I don't know what timeshare is. How am I going to sell it?" And he's like, "You'll figure it out. Just knock on the door and see what happens." I was like, "Oh shit." Right? But I'm very grateful for that training because that's really what I think was a catalyst to the rest of my sales career. Ended up doing pretty decent at a young age, helped them get back on their feet. My father ended up going through some health issues where I had to leave school a second time. Went back to school eventually, finish up my degree. That's what led me to Wall Street, where I worked at BlackRock. I went back to school with the intention to finish my fastest route out. I did that, got to Wall Street, and it was really the struggles that I went through were what built the foundation for my entire career, you know?
So, when you were working for BlackRock, were you living in New York City, or where were you based for that role?
So I was based in Princeton. Obviously, BlackRock is based on Wall Street, right? But the wholesaler's office is out of Princeton, New Jersey. So I was living in Princeton, and during training, I had to commute to the city. But then outside of that, I just lived in Princeton.
Got it. What was the biggest thing you learned about sales in that first role doing timeshares?
This is something. Brendan, we're in such a weird world today in 2023 versus 2010 as far as the sales world, right? I feel like in 2010, sales was not this sexy thing. Not everybody wanted to be in sales, right? Today, everyone's like, "Oh, I just have to go and learn sales. I can pick up this book and I can become a great salesperson and make 20, 30, $40,000 a month." Versus if you compare that to my opening, right? I was like, my daddy was like, "Get the hell in there, go and sell something." "Well, I don't know what it is." "Well, you're going to figure it out real quick." So the biggest thing that I learned is that activity is going to produce a lot more results than education, right? There's no education out there. Too many sales reps and too many salespeople are trying to find the trick of the trade, the magic trick. And there is no trick to it, right? The trick is doing your push-ups, doing your sit-ups, making your phone calls, right? It's the push-ups and sit-ups that'll eventually get you a six-pack. And it's the phone calls and the text messages and the outreach that are going to make you the most money in sales.
Yeah, it's kind of like we obviously coach coaches and consultants and small business owners, and one of the things we help them with is getting a lot more clients. And they all come to me thinking that, there's this magic curtain, and once they pay me and buy my service, we're gonna give you this like secret elixir that's just gonna, oh, all these clients are just gonna come show up at your house knocking on your door. And there are obviously shortcuts, hacks, and things we are very good at, but ultimately part of it is the accountability and the execution to just get out there and have conversations, talk to people, see what comes out of all that.
Make offers and get in front of people who want your product, right? That's the name of the game. If you're not doing those two things, you could be. I've seen, Brent, and I say this all the time. I've seen people that I've considered to be very, very good salespeople, right? Very good sales acumen, very strong on the phone, very strong with their words, right? Who've become turds of salespeople because they won't pick up the phone, right? And because they work on an offer where people don't want their service, right? But the opposite holds true as well. I've seen what I've considered very, very average salespeople, right? Who become incredible because they're willing to dial the phone and they're talking to an audience who wants to buy their service.
So you're saying if you talk to enough people and the right types of people, it mitigates needing to be this superstar salesperson.
I agree with that 100%. In fact, something that we're going through right now at SphereRocket, right, is we have made our offer so good, Brendan, right? the last thing that I want on my sales team is someone who is like this alpha salesperson where they've been a great salesperson for years and years, right? I don't need it. Like I've got a 4-point PowerPoint slide PowerPoint that they walk through. I want the guy who's young, hungry, and broke, who has never had an opportunity before, will just be like, Moose, tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I'll do it. And then they'll go and make 10 grand in their first month, you
Well, you
know?
mentioned Wall Street, and I used to work in that arena. And when we would hire, especially the hedge fund that I worked at, there were so many of these MBA, 36-year-old Harvard, worked at Goldman Sachs, and they wanted to just kind of waltz in and make 500K guaranteed plus another million on top of that. And but the most important thing was what value were they actually wanting to add. It was very much just about me and the compensation. And so we actually hired this kid, Emil, Russian immigrant. And the guy, like, he lived in New York City during the heat of the summer. It gets just as hot as Florida, some, 80, 90, 100 degrees. And he had no air conditioning. And
Oh,
when he
man.
moved into his place, I don't even think he had a bed. He was just sleeping on the floor. And that's the type of guy we looked for. Just complete savages with no ego, total humility, a lot of gratitude. I'm so happy to even be here and have this opportunity. And he just killed it for us.
It's so funny, right? I was having a conversation with one of my buddies about this earlier this week, but with a lot of small business owners, they believe, especially if they're not producing sales, they believe, oh, I'm not a good salesperson. If I could just find an amazing salesperson, all of a sudden sales would start rolling in because I have someone who's a great persuasionist, right? And it's not the case, guys. If you look at companies like BlackRock that have $9 trillion of assets under management, right? During the interview process for BlackRock, like salesmanship wasn't even on the radar, right? There were no sales team meetings. There were a lot of product meetings, right? A lot of product development meetings. But really at BlackRock, again, BlackRock's a little bit different than a hedge fund where it's not as much dialing, et cetera. But really the biggest skill set that you could have is background in finance, an understanding of the markets, Excel skill was like the most valued skill set that you could have as a salesperson at BlackRock, right? It was Excel. And to be frank, Brendan, that's one of the reasons I didn't make it, right? I was a stronger salesperson, and everyone that was around me was Princeton grad, a Harvard grad. They were super intelligent, and they had a connection, like their dad was the number two at Goldman Sachs or whatever, right? I'd gotten a job there because I was selling Cutco knives door to door. I found a great neighborhood in Princeton where everyone worked for BlackRock, and they were all like, yeah, kid, I'll buy your knives for $2,000. By the way, do you want to stop selling knives and come sell for me at BlackRock? Right? So it's really funny. And the community that I was in, I ended up not hitting it off with because they're two birds of a different feather, you know what I'm saying?
For sure. You got to find that culture fit. But what I totally agree with what you're saying, because when I first started really scaling my coaching business, and I didn't put a ton of thought into lead generation and avatar and who would be kind of our perfect fit client. And so we were getting a lot of calls set up, and I was doing a lot of sales calls, and I was getting frustrated, and I was being aggressive, and I actually got very good at it, but almost unnecessarily good, to overcompensate for the lack of quality of the marketing. Versus now, between my podcast and the clarity and straightforwardness around our marketing message and really attracting our perfect fit clients, the calls are like, you wouldn't even recognize if you looked at one of my old calls versus now. Now they're pretty much like enrollment. It's like, oh, hey, how'd you find us? Oh, I listened to the podcast. Oh, I think this is Brendan, you're amazing. Blah, blah. Okay, cool. Well, no, I know I need it. I know this is the right time. Like, it's just such a different animal when you get that marketing dialed in.
It's so funny, man, because just like you mentioned with Sphere Rocket, our nurture sequence is so dialed in and our offer is so dialed in. Sales call comes down to, hey, how can I help you? Right? Everyone wants to always talk about going through these three levels of pain and blah, blah, blah. And in 2017, when I started in this industry of high ticket sales or enrollment sales, yes, it was important, right? Today, the market is completely different, right? The market isn't booking as many calls as fast, right? They want to have more of a relationship with you or your team before they jump onto a call, right? They want to know what they're jumping on a call about. So once they have that, it's just a matter of, you booked a call with me. How can I help you? Okay, cool. Are you a good fit? And now you can use your sales process as a way to filter people out. If you start, I say all the time, if you push the wrong client into your program, there's nothing more expensive than having the wrong client in your program.
Wait, that's important. Say that again.
There's nothing more expensive than having the wrong client in your program.
Yeah, because of the headaches and the energy and
Because of the headaches, and they typically won't make it work no matter what, right? You tell them to do the push-ups and sit-ups, and they find another way to get around doing the push-ups and sit-ups, right? And then they say, oh, it's your fault. You didn't tell me to do the push-ups and sit-ups enough times, right? Then they end up refunding anyways. And it's like, damn it, I just lost 30 hours between trying to get this client on board, trying to make sure I'm holding them by the hand properly. And it was a waste of time anyways, right? So if you realize that, your sales process shouldn't be a way to bring people in. It should be a way to filter people out. I say all the time, right? Sales position should be a goalie, not a striker,
that's good.
right? They're stopping the trash from coming in, not putting the ball in the net.
Okay. Yeah, no, I totally agree because I've been very heavy lately on primarily looking to disqualify people as much as possible. And I even pitched this guy yesterday that I knew I shouldn't have, and then he wanted to do a follow-up call, and we're not going to have that follow-up call. But I guess a couple questions. The first one is, this is just kind of a personal thing that I'm facing now because I am playing more of that goalie role as a salesperson. I'm noticing people can get very emotional and very angry and very offended when you DQ them. Not always, but I'm noticing that they take it very personally sometimes. Like I had a guy get very angry at me and raise his voice towards me when I told him, hey, you're just not, a good fit for this. So any kind of advice on how to navigate once you know someone's not good and you're just trying to get off the call, but you obviously don't want to hang up on them, right? What's the best way to do that civilly,
So I hate to say this, but if you're doing a push pull on a sales call, right, and somebody is starting to get aggressive through the disqualification process, what they're doing is they're actually proving your point, right? That they're not a good fit. And it's like,
Correct.
thank goodness I'm doing this, right? There's no need to sit on that or chew on that and be like, damn, like, this guy's really frustrated, right? They're proving your point. What should happen in sort of this push pull scenario is if you're disqualifying the entire time through the sales process, right? They should start telling you why they're not disqualified, not getting angry about it. If they're getting angry about it, they're showing you you're correct, right? If they're trying to prove that that they are the right fit, then allow them and then you proceed. Let me give you an example. And I can take your program as an example, Brendan, right? So you're a coach, role play it with me, right? You're a coach who's looking to scale your business. And maybe you don't have maybe you only have 10 hours a week to dedicate towards this, right? Well, Brendan, if you only have 10 hours a week to dedicate towards this, I hate to tell you, but this is going to take more effort than that in order to have success. I don't care if you need to work after hours. I don't care if you need to skip family time, but in order to have success with us, it's going to take more time. So are you sure that you have only 10 hours a week, or are there things that we can move around to make sure that this is a successful product for you?
Yeah, no, you're right. I respect you saying that because I know this is important to me and I can find time.
Right. So you pulled back in. Okay, cool. So now you're telling me that you do have the time. Awesome. Let's move to the next question, right? But if they're like, well, fuck, I don't have the time, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. Well, maybe this will be a better fit for you down the road. One of my first sales mentors taught me a sales tactic called delaying the decision, right? And delaying the decision is one of the most powerful tools that you can have in your sales arsenal, than any other sales tactic that I know of, because it's not a sales tactic. All it is a conversation, right? Well, cool, Brendan, if you don't have the time today, right, this probably isn't going to be a fit for you, right? But maybe in 2 months from now, 3 months from now, maybe it's a week from now. I don't really know your situation, Brendan. Maybe more availability will open up where I can ensure that you'll have success, right? And we can have a conversation from there, right? Well, if you have those conversations and you're cool just like that, right? they're going to say one of two things. They're either going to push back and say, no, I think I can make the time where you continue the conversation, or they're going to say, you're right, let me come back to you at a later time. And when this is done properly, what ends up happening is at 2 o'clock in the morning, this person wakes up and they're like, shit, I've got so much anxiety about going back to the office tomorrow and need to find a way to make the time. You'll get a text message at 4 o'clock in the morning where they're like, Brennan, I will find the time to make this happen. I'm so sorry. Right?
Yeah.
Well, great. Awesome. Let's jump back on another call.
Right. No, that's good. That's good.
And you can do that on any qualifier.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. I want to go back to something you said earlier about kind of money and how kind of salespeople treat their income, right?
Yeah.
I had a friend when I was Wall Street who actually lived in Leonardo DiCaprio's old place downtown, and he made about $1 million a year, but he would spend between 1.2 and 1.5. So how can we all sort of navigate our money better? Because I'm learning even at high, high levels, you can still burn through it all. And at lower levels, you can still actually really accrue a lot of wealth if you're smart with it. So I'm curious what your process has been around that.
It depends a little bit from person to person, Brennan. And with both of our backgrounds being in finance, you'll know where I'm coming from with this, right? But the way that your goals are set up might not be equivalent to the way that my goals are set up. And that's okay, right? I don't want to be the next Warren Buffett, right? I don't want to be a multi-billionaire. I have no ambition to do that, right? The first place that anybody needs to start, whether you're a business owner, whether you're a sales rep, whether you are whoever you are, is you need to reverse engineer your goals. Okay. There's a worksheet that I'll recommend. It's called the Lifestyle Worksheet by the 4-Hour Workweek.
Tim Ferriss.
I'll try to find it later for you. By Tim Ferriss. Yeah. Lifestyle Worksheet, I think it's called. But you can get it on in an Excel online. And basically what he does with that worksheet is he is reverse engineering your goals, right? If you could have your dream lifestyle, right? What is it that you would want, right? Do you need a Lambo? Awesome. If you need a Lambo, throw it in the sheet, right? Do you need a 10,000 square feet mansion? If you need a 10,000 square feet mansion, throw it in there. What's it going to cost? What's your mortgage note going to be on that, right? Whatever your goals are, be able to calculate what that looks like and then be able to reverse engineer what you need to make and what you need to put away in order to sustain those goals, right? So here's my answer. My end game is not to do those things, like I mentioned. My end game, Brendan, is to be a high school football coach, right? I want to spend time with my wife. I want to spend time with my family, and I want to coach high school football. I don't make much money coaching high school football, right? So I know that I can't live off of my $10,000 a year as a high school football coach, right? Well, in order to be able to hit those goals, et cetera, what I need to do is I need to put away about $2.5 million.
Right.
Okay. If I put away $2.5 million, the reason why I come to that number, you'll know where I'm going with this, is a rule called the 4% rule, right? The 4% rule with a net worth of $2.5 million, I can extract $100,000 a year. As long as my money is making 7% annually, I will still yield 3% on that money. That's $100,000 a year that I'm living off of, which is all I need, right? That's great. If I'm coaching high school football, if I'm a teacher, my assets are paid off. That's all I need, right? Now, again, if you want to make $300,000 a month, $400,000 a month, if that's what you need to live off of, cool. I'm not saying that my goals have to be anybody else's goals. I'm saying what my goals are.
Yeah. No, that's good. By
Is
the
that
way,
a fair answer?
No, that's a great answer. Yeah. I was just going to say you should, I'll give you some investment pointers on how to juice up that safely your return.
Yeah.
Get you there.
Please do. Absolutely,
no,
man.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, that's that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate you sharing that. I'm curious also kind of speaking about football. How did you walk on to Florida State? I mean, that's one of the best college football programs in the country. How did that happen?
Yeah, so I always say that that was my first experience selling anything, because it wasn't until I left Florida State to where I got my first sales job, right? But I was a 6-foot, 194-pound linebacker with the best linebackers in the country, right? Where they weighed 240, 250. they ran a 4:5:40, and I tell people that my 40 time was a forever, right? So I was not adequate enough to play football at Florida State, but it was a true Rudy story, right? I had a couple of D2, D3 offers coming out of high school. I accepted one of the D2 offers, and then literally one night, like, delayed the decision, right? Florida State did with me. One night at like 3 a.m., I called that coach, and I was like, "Coach, I can't go. I have to go walk on to Florida State. This was always my dream. I need to give this a shot," right? So once I got to Florida State, every day I would run from my dorm room, which was off campus, down to the stadium where the football office was. And I would go into the office and I would say, "Hey, who's in charge of walk-on tryouts?" Right. Well, for the first semester, I didn't get an answer. And they would always say, "Just leave, kid." Right. Well, I didn't know what else to do but to keep going back every single day. Right. And I would say, "Eventually, you guys are going to put me in touch with the right person," whether I was talking to the front desk girl or whoever it was. Right. One day, my second semester in, I'm sitting at the lunch in the cafeteria with one of my buddies, and I get a call from a coach by the name of Odell Higgins, right? He's the defensive line coach. He's still the defensive line coach today. And he says, "Hey, Jonathan Reed, I've heard you swung by quite a bit. Bring your cleats, bring your workout clothes down to the field tomorrow at 8 a.m., right? I went down there. The walk-on tryout consisted of two things. Now keep in mind, this was the semester that Bobby Bowden got fired, if you're a football fan. Mm-hmm. So it was Jimbo Fisher's first semester in as head coach. The walk-on tryout was two things. Everyone who was there were about 20 of us, had to line up on one side of the field. Very simple. We had to do 10 push-ups, run across to the other side of the field, do 10 sit-ups, run across the other side of the field. Do 9 push-ups across the field, 9 sit-ups, down to 1. If you didn't leave, then you went into a interview process, right? In the interview process, they said, "What position do you play?" Right? I told them I was a linebacker. They were like, "Great. We need some scout team guys for linebacker." Quarterbacks wouldn't have that same opportunity, right? They said, "Why do you want to play football for Florida State?" And I told them, I was like, I'll be a Rudy. Like, the NFL was never my dream. Florida State was always my dream, right? They said, "Great, go get your medical stuff done. See ya tomorrow." You know? So it was that simple.
How many people showed up at the beginning of that morning?
About 20 of us.
Wow.
About 20 of us, yeah.
I think there'd be more. But maybe people just didn't know about it?
Yeah, correct. I don't know how they got invited. But one of them was the best man in my wedding as well. And we were friends since eighth grade. We played football in Destin, Florida together. And really funny story. So I walked on at 6 foot. He walked on at about 6'1". He was 240. He played center, right? And Jimbo Fisher came up to us the one day and he was like, "Yo, you boys need to go and eat. Like, y'all are going to get hurt out here." And we're
crazy at 240. Like,
we're not small guys, man.
Yeah. Wild.
So it was cool. I had one tackle in one spring game. They announced my name in the spring game. It was sort of a dream come true. But man, it was tough to give up on that dream, though. You know.
That's awesome, man. You know, it's funny. I had Rennie Curran on my podcast. He played in the NFL a little bit, and he was the captain of Georgia football. And I remember. Wow. I was almost like more impressed by that than the fact that he had been drafted and was in the NFL. Cause when you think about, you know, Georgia's playing today, I think they're ranked one in the nation, and to be
they are
captain of that team
is blowing some team out right now. Some no name team out 37 nothing at halftime,
but Ball State, I think.
No,
but it was pretty cool. Yeah. He was on the Titans, and I know he ran like a 4.7 and stuff like that. But anyway,
I was easily a 5'1" on a good day, Brendan.
On a good day.
On a good day.
I love it, man.
So I was slow, man.
Yeah, well, hey, you made the team. That's all that matters.
That was it.
All that matters. Sweet. So let's talk about kind of your transition then from your sales career to, I guess it was recruiting first, right?
Yeah.
And then to Sphere Rocket, correct?
Yeah. So So I had a successful career in sales. One of my buddies was starting a recruitment company, and we were building out sales teams. And he said, "Moose, I think with your track record, and I think with your network, you could be strong on the recruitment side." And it ended up growing into something pretty significant. Over a 5 year span, we built out a hundred. Well, over a 3 year span, actually, we built out over 150 different teams. Place over 3,000 salespeople, whether it was what we would in our industry consider closers and setters. It was a wild ride. But then last March, I was recruited, I was headhunted to be a sales director for an international logistics company. And while the gig was good, it was like watching paint dry compared to what we're used to, Brendan. It was so boring just talking about trade lanes between China and California. And I was so bored. But luckily, Spear Rocket was one of the teams that I had built out 3 years ago. So Justin, is the CEO. He would invite me out to events where I would come out and sell with him at events over weekends and make great money over a weekend. But eventually he knew how bored I was, and he was like, "Moose, why don't I poach you from your gig," right? He gave me a bit more of a higher upside than I had currently. This was back in November of 2022. So I've been on board with them since then. It's been an amazing opportunity, though. Since I've been on board, we've gone from about 20 units a month at about an average price point of $10,000 a year to about 80 units a month at the same price point. We sell virtual assistants. Virtual assistants can do a wide range of services for you. Our most common are executive assistants that we hire for. We hire for social media managers, we hire appointment setters, we hire video editors. So it's not a one size fits all service, right? It's really a customized process that we do. But basically, Brendan, what our thought was, if you went to another virtual assistant company in the arena, the way that they charge is they charge a certain hourly rate. They take a scrape, they hub the virtual assistant somewhere in the Philippines, and then they pay the virtual assistant the difference. As the consumer, that means that you have no control over your virtual assistant. If you see that they are getting spread, they're being less productive, it's because they're spread across four or five different accounts and you have no idea, right? But with us, we said, how much less can we charge the end consumer if they pay us a headhunting and a co-management fee? So we have all the SOPs built out. We have 20 hours a week worth of live training for the virtual assistants, training for the clients, et cetera. And then we can essentially give the virtual assistants to the clients at cost, right? Where now they control the relationship of the virtual assistant, right?
So much better. I've done both, and the one thing I hate the most is when they just give you a VA and you can't even like choose someone else and you're stuck with that person, you know?
And it doesn't limit us from the recruitment standpoint too, Brennan. I had a client last month who said, "Moose, I need a electrical engineer in the Philippines, right, to audit some of my electrical engineering work." Cool. Well, we can run that, right? We're not limited by the talent that we have in-house because we don't have anyone in-house, right? Ours is all remote. Of course, we do have 100 virtual assistants that work for our company directly, but over the last 3 years, we've staffed 4,500 virtual assistants now, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome, man. So, you know what, I guess one of the things that I would say, I love virtual assistants. I have someone we're looking to add and just continue to bring them onto the team. What would you say are kind of some of the best uses of them, whether you're a solopreneur, entrepreneur, or small business owner?
Yeah, it depends on what your target is, right? There's only two things that you can outsource for a virtual assistant. The first thing that you can outsource is things for your personal life, right? I'll give you an example. My executive assistant does my taxes for me every year, right? She fills out an Excel sheet, sends it back to the CPA, communicates with the CPA. I just won't do it, right? So she does it for me. She plans all my vacations for me. Last year, my wife, it was on her bucket list to go to Salem, Massachusetts for Halloween. Well, I built out, and well, my executive assistant built out an hour by hour itinerary for us, and she has access to one of my credit cards, bought the flights, bought the hotel room, right? As far as my wife knows, I'm the best husband in the world, right? But she doesn't realize that she's married to my executive assistant. So she manages my laundry cleaning company. She manages all my personal life, right? But then from a business standpoint, there are a lot of activities that you can use in your business to try and get extra leverage, whether you're the business owner or whether you're the salesperson. So talk that I'd really like to give, if you are trying to increase revenue in your position, you want to do it at a low labor cost. The first three positions that I would recommend, the first one would be a video editor, right? The reason why a video editor is so important is because you, as a business owner, as a salesperson, whatever it is, are always trying to come up with new content on what you should be posting in front of your audience to try and bring in new clients. Here's my process, guys. I'll share it with you exactly. All these calls, the one that we're on right now, is being recorded, right? That's not by mistake. Just like we talked about earlier, Brennan, this is doing the push-ups and the sit-ups for our business, right? Well, at the end of this, I take the push-ups and the sit-ups and I send it back to my video editor. And it costs us $6 an hour. She'll turn this, if it were on for a half hour, into six or seven pieces of content, right? If I do four or five of those in a given day, my content is done for a month. It's crazy.
We got this right
That's
here.
right. There you go. Exactly
the, for
right.
the listeners, we I get an Instagram message from Moose today. He goes, "Hey, Brent, I got all these assets and social media things for the podcast." And I'm sitting there, I'm like, "Where's this guy get the time? He's got family, he's got a kid on the way, he's got a wife, he's got two dogs, he's running sales for a $1 million a month or more company." I'm like, "Where's this guy getting the time to chop up these pieces of content? We didn't even do the episode yet, and you already have content." So it makes sense now. It's all coming together.
Business owners, they spend so much time on Canva and chopping video, and they're like, oh, it's so important. Yes, it is important. But at the end of the day, Brennan, it's a $6 an hour task, right? That's what you don't realize. There's other things that you can be working on, right? So now you have the content, right? The second position that I would hire for is a social media manager, right? Simple, Brennan. Why is a social media manager important after a video editor?
Post it.
Post it, bingo, right?
You
It's not
wouldn't just
rocket
get one
science, guys.
full-time VA who could do both because they're different skill sets.
You could. Problem is, because I send so much content to my video editor, right? She has a backlog of content. It takes 40 hours worth of work for her to stay fully in video editing. But
Which is better too,
with
because
that
then
being
each person can just focus on their thing, right?
really what our focus on, Brennan, is at SpearRocket is we want to help you departmentalize your team, whether that means you have multiple people at 20 hours a week, several people at 40, you'll increase their bandwidth as your needs increase, right? So my video editor, perfect example, she works 40 hours a week, right? My social media manager is responsible for posting 300 times a month across Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn, right? Well, she can do that in 20 to 25 hours of work worth a week at a cost of $5 an hour, right? So she's really responsible for two things. The first is posting so that the audience sees the content. The second is traffic generation, right? I always compare social media to a billboard, right? And people post content and they're like, oh, I'm not getting any sales from it. Well, your billboard is sitting in the middle of Iowa, right? Unless you have new traffic passing that billboard every single day, you're not going to generate more sales. So, really simple tactic, right? My social media manager, if she knows that we have a podcast going on with the Brendan Burns Show, should go to Brendan Burns' Facebook and start adding his friends to our profile to
Genius.
try and drive more traffic.
And
Make
grow
sense?
your network, grow your audience, like-minded
Yep.
people. Brilliant.
I can take five or six what I would consider competitors. It's not that you're a competitor, Brendan. I'm just giving the example, right? Where I know their traffic is interested in my content already because they're liking somebody else's content that's similar. Now I can add 100 people per day as long as they have three or more mutual friends, which increases over time. So their eyeballs are now falling on my content. Make sense?
Genius, man. After I so Moose, you sent me this social media video of our pot like preparing for the podcast. I throw it up as a story this morning. I have people sending me messages in, people who've seen the story, people know the episode's about to come out. I had a guy message me, "Oh, you should do an episode on this." And I had another guy who was actually at the event where we met send me a message, No way. I can't wait to listen to that episode. I mean, these
That's
little
awesome.
things create the following and the traction and the energy to grow your audience and engagement. And to tie this point of how valuable having virtual assistants like Moose was talking about to what we were talking about earlier, if you're trying to get more clients or build a sales team and you don't want to have to do those intense, aggressive, hard closes, just do this type of stuff because it attracts these amazing, loyal people who love your stuff.
Yes. And here's the thing. If you're starting your business, Brendan, right? If you are a new business owner who's trying to go full time, what I want you to realize is that we've been talking a lot about doing the push-ups and the sit-ups, right? It's impossible to do everything, guys. Don't put the weight of the world on your shoulder. If you believe that your business is going to be worth more than $4 an hour, start outsourcing it to someone else who can do the push-ups and sit-ups for you, right? Because we're in this world of online business, we are actually in a space where somebody can do the push-ups and sit-ups for us. Does it cost some money? Yeah. But if it's worth more than $4 an hour to you, you should be doing it consistently, right?
Yeah.
So if you have the video editor and you have the person who's pushing the content and then pushing the traffic, what's the third piece, Brendan? What do you think?
I mean, it really depends on the business. Like for me, obviously having some kind of appointment setter or person who could drive sales would make the most sense.
Nailed it. Because now your next step is to get people who are interacting with your content onto your calendar. Brendan, I don't know, will the audience see this on camera?
Yeah, we're going to do a video of this on YouTube.
Okay, cool. Do you mind if I share my screen with you?
Yeah, let me share it. Hold on one second. Do it.
So guys, once every 3-4 weeks, I do what's called a CTA for my audience, right? And because they are seeing my content consistently, engaging with my content consistently, I know that they're interested. So when I run a call to action, now this is their opportunity to raise their hand and say that they're interested in my services, right? I drop some type of piece of value and I have an appointment setter go in and set all the appointments, right? So this one that
Look
I did.
Look at the engagement on that, 627 comments. It's
627 comments, right? But here's the trick to this. You ready? With every single comment that I get, I'll take a second to load. My social media manager responds, dropping a GIF, saying, looking like it's me, but it's not. It's just boosting the algorithm so that falls on
right,
more eyes.
Because every reply from you just doubles engagement.
Doubles engagement, correct, yeah. Yep. Then I have my inside sales team, my appointment setters, responding to those comments, creating a three-way message between my social media manager, so the prospect thinks that it's me, and the prospect, right, saying, hey, Steve, did you request the SOP on appointment setters from Moose? And why not just send them the SOP, right? Well, super, super simple process, because if we just send them the SOP, the conversation is dead. If Steve says, yes, I was. Okay, great. Here's your SOP. By the way, do you have virtual assistants already? And it leads into a two-pronged conversation. Yes, I do. Awesome. Where are you getting them from? I'm getting them from XYZ. Okay, cool. Did you know that Moose has a couple of risk-free ways to get started with them with virtual assistants? Or they say, no. What stopped you from getting virtual assistants? Well, I don't know if it's worth the cost, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. You should jump on a call with Moose because he has a couple of risk-free ways to get started, right? From this one post, here's where it gets interesting, Brendan. From this one post last month, I did 8 new sales. So it did $80,000 in business for me.
From one Facebook post.
From one Facebook post, right? But where this is interesting is I told my sales team last month, or I'm sorry, in July, that I could outproduce them with the lowest priority on the calendar, through organic traffic and from self-generated traffic and from referrals, right? By the end of the month in both July and August, I moved 30 units. The closest performer on my team did 17.
Wow.
Well, I had the least paid ads running to my
Because this is all free.
I mean, this is all free.
Whatever, you know, $5 an hour VA, like.
Correct.
Not heavy ad spend.
Yep.
Dude. This is genius.
Crazy, man.
As you're doing this, I'm reaching out to my team. I'm texting, let's get this Facebook thing going. Because I have a big Facebook account, almost maxed out 5,000 people. And we have VAs who are chopping the content. But we're not doing the third and final piece to this. strategy.
Well, Brent, for you, and you know this already, but for you and for any of your listeners, again, a lot of times people come to me and they say, Moose, I'm getting a virtual assistant, et cetera. I'm not sure where to start, right? Guys, please feel free to use me as a resource. Like, it doesn't have to be a sales conversation. If there's any way that I can help you or your career or your business, please feel free to reach out to me. We've hired 4,500 virtual assistants over the last 3 years. We have SOPs that line up from what their 90-day ramp-up period is going to look like to 50 different tasks that a inside sales agent or an appointment center could do for you in a given day to a 9-to-5 schedule if they worked 40 hours a week for you. And does your SOP have to line up perfectly? No, but I also don't want you to guess and then have a bad experience with virtual assistants and then it doesn't work out for anybody.
Well, I think one of the things that makes someone really powerful at sales and at building relationships and building a strong long-term career, which you have done and are continuing to do, is you are a valuable asset and you are very helpful. And so
Yeah.
a lot of times people are like, well, yeah, I could help you, but like, how am I can't monetize this right now. So like, F you, I'm gonna go find a better deal I can close in the minute, which is kind of
Yeah.
like how we connected, where at the time, I mean, I am or was a prospective client for you, but your focus with me when we first met in Mexico was just helping me, just giving me value, just providing me resources, connecting, and then
That's it.
ultimately turning into the podcast, turning into being able to talk about this to my whole audience and all these things. And so it's just cool to see kind of all the different things you've done well to build this successful sales career.
I appreciate it, Brendan. I think that back in 2017, when VSLs became a thing, there was a ideology that was transitioned in the sales space that you should move away from relationship selling and move towards authority-based selling. And I get that, right? When leads were coming in super cheap and super warm, cool, all good, right? Today's market, it's not by mistake, right? I tell this to good salespeople all the time, like, as long as you have good relationships in the market, people will refer you more business, right? If you can take your sales career from selling one-to-one to selling one-to-many, that's how your sales career will evolve, right? And you just do that by just being a good person, just having a relationship with the person. And if the opportunity arises for them to buy something instead of being sold something, just allow that opportunity to arise.
Yeah, no, it's so smart. I mean, I know a lot of people who are very heavy on ads and VSLs and these types of things, and they're making a lot of money now. But what's happening is they're not renewed. Like, part of relationship-based selling is fulfillment and keeping those clients happy. And I'm seeing those people specifically not renewing well. Also, their ad costs and their re is very high. Their return on ad spend is very low. So even kind of taking a relationship-based holistic, healthy approach with people, plus the organic strategies you've just shared with us, and then layer ads on top of that, that's going to crush, because now you have a lot of familiarity in the space. You know, you're the guy named Moose
Absolutely.
who wears the cool bud hat light and is smart and nice to everyone and all these things. And so now, if you did an ad to Facebook to a lookalike of your followers or whatever in the hat, adding value, like, that's going to crush it, like probably a 10x ROAS versus, you know, 1 to 1.5 to 3x for some of these other people.
That's the name of the game. A lot of business owners will come to me and they'll say, Moose, what is the best way to do advertising, right? Is it organic? Is it ads? Is it X? Is it Y, right? And guys, the real answer to that, like Brendan's saying, is it's not one or the other. It's how do you incorporate all, right? There's this idea of omnipresence, right? Where if you can be everywhere that your market follows, right? Amazing. You'll always be in front of them, right? So you have to do the organic. You have to do the ads. You have to do anything events are a big avenue for Spirit Rocket. We spent $1 million in event sponsorship this year, right? So you have to have them all. As long as you're generating an ROI from them over a 90-day period, you keep them running, even if the ROI changes on a 30 to 30-day basis, right? But as long as they're generating an ROI over a 90-day period, you keep them going.
I love it. So, if someone was interested in learning more about Sphere Rocket, virtual assistants, you connecting with you or your team, what's the best way to go about that?
Yeah, so first of all, guys, please feel free to reach out to Brennan. Brennan, if you ever want to connect us in a three-way message, it can be on Instagram, it could be on Facebook, it could be cell phone. Feel free to connect us on cell phone. I should have brought my QR code. You can also go to, give me 2 seconds.
Well, I'm going to say too, guys. So, I still personally manage my own Instagram direct message inbox, for at the Brendan Burns show on Instagram. So, if you're interested in connecting with Moose, just send me a message there and I can get you guys connected for sure.
Yeah, you can also go to SphereRocketVA.com. SphereRocketVA.com. I'll show you the website, Brendan, for anyone who's watching. There is a chance to book a calendar or book a call straight from the calendar from there, guys. And Brendan, if it's beneficial, I'll send you over my QR code. This way, if we want to put that on the YouTube link, anyone can book straight from that.
Yes, send that over. We can drop all that in the show notes for the show.
Cool.
But hey, Moose Reed, sales director at Sphere Rocket Virtual Assistant, former FSU football player, upcoming father, husband, awesome all-around man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Brendan, thanks so much for having me, man.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Brendan Burns Show. If it's your first time here, please make sure to subscribe on the Apple Podcasts app or in Spotify. Also, please leave us a rating or written review. This helps others learn about the show and spread the word to new and more people. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.